So in Germany alone, each year insurers pay out more than 3.1 billion in insured leakage claims in commercial, but also in private insurance. There are different types of leaks. You can have pipe bursts, micro leakages, or surface water from rain or broken machines or heating systems, for instance. So you need actually sensors that are capable of detecting different types of leaks.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back, wherever you are and whatever you are up to. Matthew Grant here, CEO of Instech, and I hope whichever part of the world you are in is as sunny as it has been in London this weekend. Talking of sun, renewable energy is one of the topics I cover this week when I speak to Verena Brenner, CEO of HDI Thinks. Now, HDI is a large German-based insurer. It's over 100 years old, but it's another organization that's proving that age is no barrier to innovation. Verena launched HDI Thinks when she was working at HDI, and she now runs the company as a successful startup operating outside of HDI's direct control. Well, we've been hearing about potential use of sensors and IoT by insurers and their clients for risk mitigation and underwriting for a few years now, and it was fascinating for me to hear some practical examples of where this is working at scale. Now, if you haven't discovered what we're doing at Instech around the world with technology companies of all size and how insurers are able to tap into our knowledge and network, then take a look at www.instech.co, or better still, come and join us at a future event in the US or the UK. Okay, on with the show. Verena, delighted to have you today. I've been following what you've been doing for a few years now, so it's really interesting to actually dig into it and also talk to you about your the founders. So you're speaking to us from Berlin, I think, today.
That's correct, and thank you for having me.
So you're a spin-off from global insurer HDI. You were the founder back in 2019, and originally you were an incubator for IoT solutions. And today you've kind of developed from that and you're providing software to support risk management applications for insurers and in insurance clients and really operating somewhat independently as HDI. How is that? Did I get my elevator pitch okay?
You did it perfectly fine, Matthew. So that's correct. We started our journey in the last quarter of 2019 and it has been an incredible development ever since.
Congratulations, because people often talk about entrepreneurs or how insurance companies need to be more innovative, and you're clearly an example of that. We'll talk about some of the success you've had. But let me just start off with a little bit about you. So I see you did a PhD in supply chain disruption, what, about 10 years ago, which, given some of the challenges you had the last few years, was thinking ahead. I mean, what was it that took you to do a PhD in that topic?
Yeah, well, I admit that it's quite a niche topic, or at least back then it was quite a niche topic. During my studies of economics, I worked at a logistics association from the cold chain logistics. And I was always astonished how much cold chain ruptures there are, despite all the technology that was already there back in 2008, 2009. And also, by the way, all the sensors that were applied already. And so that got me thinking, how is it that these technologies don't help us to further reduce the losses of food and pharmaceuticals in logistics? So that got me to the topic of causes of supply chain disruptions and how these might be avoided.
No, really interesting. And cold chain, that is, for people that aren't familiar with that term, that is a movement of goods. You mentioned foods and pharmaceuticals that need to be refrigerated during their journey. Is that right?
Yeah, everything basically that is temperature controlled during movement, so along the entire supply chain from production up to the point of sale.
Fascinating. And then you joined HDI and you worked in a role in the core business, and then you personally had the motivation to start up HDI Thinks. So what happened there? It'd be great to know what it was that drove you to make that move.
Yeah, well, when I started at HDI Global, I was working for HDI Risk Consulting, and I was doing consultancy for industrial customers in the area of business interruption, which was linked somehow to my PhD. And I got to know a lot of different companies, a lot of different business models, and it was always striking to see how these companies further evolve and also how this impacts the risks these companies face. I mean, supply chain risks, supply chain disruptions is one prime example of such types of developments. Beginning of 2019, I got approached to head a project on the relevance of industrial IoT for HDI Global. In the beginning, I was not that convinced that it is actually a topic for an insurer because the insurer usually is quite far away from such operational topics and also the sensor technology that is applied in the field. But we did a lot of customer interviews and I realized that a lot of our customers already were working on IoT-based solutions or on implementing such technologies in their own production. So this sparked the idea that if the industry is using these technologies, it will sooner or later have an impact on the risk that the insurer has, can be either positive or negative. But in any case, we need competencies to understand really the impact on the insured portfolio. And what the customers also told me was that they would actually like to partner with the insurer to better understand the implications of using IoT in their operations on the risks that they have and how they also could maybe bundle IoT solutions with insurance to make their own products more attractive to the market. So there was an opportunity to not only be the insurer that takes over the remaining risks, but really be a partner in such innovative developments for the customers.
That point you made about the customers coming to you or you as HDI in those days and asking for help is particularly interesting because sometimes it feels like the insurers are looking for solutions and they can't necessarily find their insurance clients to work with them. But I know that has been a big part of your success. And I suppose people that aren't always familiar with how sensors are being used, I would guess in all the situations today when you're working with customers, they have their own sensors in place. Would that be right? Or are you also having to help them put sensors in place? Because obviously the benefit if you're using existing technology in there and primarily focusing on the data and the risk management versus having to start to implement hardware.
Yeah, it really depends on the use case. So in most cases, we use sensor technology that is either already installed or that is then provided by a partner for these customers. And in other cases, we have to bring in sensor packages ourselves because that's the solution we trust. And this is something that works also then with our software solutions. And the point about us being close to the customers is also maybe because HDI has been funded more than 100 years ago by the German industry and still has such a mutual structure where there is a very close interaction with the customers.
Yeah, that must help a lot. And let's just go back to this point when you moved from working for HDI and then you set up HDI Thinx. How does that happen? You've got a large organization in there, very different business. What's your advice to anybody else that is working for an insurance company or a large organization and wants to go and set up a business? I mean, that could be a podcast in its own right, but I'd love to get your own experience on that.
Well, the first thing you probably should do is gather evidence that what you want to do is worth the effort. We did it back then. We had a lot of interviews. We had a lot of evidence. And so we went to the board with all what we have gathered. And it was clear that we need to pursue this topic, but it can't be done as innovation, as a hobby. And we would also need different talents and to really dig in. So I created basically two different approaches. Well, the first approach was creating a department at the headquarters of HDI. And the other approach was to create a startup outside of the corporate rules, guidelines, and infrastructure to really attract the type of talent that we were looking for. And actually, HDI chose the bold move to create this new company. And then obviously, I needed to create a business plan or to show the business plan. And it is all going back to working based on evidence, getting the trust of the board members, and then working a lot.
You mentioned the board members, but how do you do this? I'm assuming you have to find some kind of sponsor at a very senior position and initially get them on board and they work with you, because I don't imagine that HDI had sort of a fund sitting there and waiting for someone to turn up and say, can I start a spin-off? You've actually got to convince people right from the very start, presumably, to go and do it. And then at some point, they're going to have to spend some money on you to start things off.
That's correct. And this came from the project that I originally managed. So the sponsor of the project was one of the board members, and he was obviously with me in the entire project along the entire way. And together we managed to convince everyone required to create HDI Things.
And you yourself, like all credible technology startups, have gone through, I think I would call it a little bit of a pivot. So you started off originally providing incubation advisory work, and now, in addition to doing that, you're actually building your own software solutions as a service in its own right. Was that always part of the plan, or did it sort of evolve as you found different ways to help your clients?
Yeah, it certainly evolved and is part of also our culture, so evidence-based business model development. So in the original plan, we set up the ideation funnel to come from a first idea for a potential new product or solution up to the point where we would create an MVP, so a minimum viable product. We had the team to do this, and the idea was that afterwards those solutions would be handed over to partners from the insurance or from the industry, or to create a venture around these solutions. But we soon realized that it's a big challenge for every classical organization to suddenly start operating and scaling IoT-based software solutions within their own structures. And so it made total sense for us to further develop our business model to take in the operations, maintenance, and scaling of our solutions ourselves, so that our partners can really focus on what they do best and they can extend their own value proposition with our services without having to build the infrastructure around it.
And then in terms of specifically where you are seeing some opportunities and growth, I know ESG and sustainability is a big part of what we're looking at, but it would just be great to get some examples about where you're collaborating with your clients and where you're building solutions to help organizations with IoT and sensors.
Yeah, sure. The reason why one of our focus areas is ESG and sustainability is that simply it's a very dynamically evolving field, which is by now already impacting a lot of organizations. And whenever there are new trends impacting organizations, also the insurers have to find ways how to deal with those things. So especially in the renewable energy sector, we see a very dynamic development, meaning a lot of investment going into increasing the capacities in renewable energies, while at the same time, the entire supply chain for these new markets are still evolving. And there's a lot of regulatory changes around these topics. So insurers also struggle to keep up with the capacity growth and speed of innovation in this type of market. And this is a good place for us to develop new solutions where we do not have the 10, 20, 30 years loss history that usually the insurer would like to see, but really going to the ground, to the asset itself, and collecting machine data that is then assessed with the help of algorithms and AI to come up with faster insights into these specific risks.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that in a minute about what you do with that information. But in terms of examples, I see that the battery storage is one area that you're helping in that regard. What are the kind of risks that you tend to see with battery storage? What are people being insured for?
The reason why we started this specific use case was that risk engineers, underwriters, and well, the insurers in general struggle a little bit with these types of risks. So battery energy storage systems absolutely required for the renewable energy transition. But they have this very negative perception that fires of such batteries cannot be mitigated. So once such a battery has a thermal runaway, there's not much you can do. And usually insurers are a little bit hesitant to take these types of risks. So to make this risk better and to help in the assessment and also to come up with alternative protection measures. We created a use case around battery energy storage systems, where we partnered up with a company that is specialized in the monitoring of these systems and also in the prediction of potential thermal runaways in the future. And based on their technology, so we did a lot of validation and assessment of this technology. We then helped the insurer to create adapted insurance propositions around battery energy storage systems.
That's why I love these interviews so much, because I come across all these different terms. So thermal runaway is, I'm guessing that's when the heat gets so intense that you can no longer control, I guess, the damage and the fire. And by predicting it, presumably you're seeing some rise in temperature, so you can actually do something before it becomes a catastrophic failure.
Exactly. So there are some indicators that help to predict the thermal runaway in the future. And this gives the operator of such a system more time to maybe replace a certain battery module and to react before the big battery fire starts. And this also gives then the insurer the possibility to recommend other types of protection measures, because classical protection measures might not work that well with these types of technologies. And this is where we see that IoT has a huge benefit, together with predictive maintenance algorithms and AI.
And what about wind turbines? I think you're doing something on wind turbines. Is that also, you're using element of prediction for those as well?
That's correct. So we also have a use case around onshore wind turbines, where we also see huge increase in capacities. And at the same time, the wind turbines themselves are getting larger and larger, which means that the property damage to one wind turbine can have a significant higher business interruption impact than it would have in the past. So again, there is the struggle to have proper insurance for this, and also to have proper maintenance contracts around wind turbines. So with a different partner in this area, whom we validated, we created a solution that also gives then transparency to underwriters and risk engineers on the actual risk of the insured wind turbines, helping them to further reduce the loss ratio and have an improved portfolio.
So you're getting the predictive data. You presumably are finding some like-minded insurers. I mean, some of this goes back into HDI. You start to see examples of when more capacity is being made available, because I know this is a challenge for wind turbines, it's a challenge for solar panels. I mean, it's one of the big concerns about the sort of transitioning to renewables is this lack of capacity. But are you starting to see some positive signs that insurers are getting more comfortable to provide more capacity because they've got a better understanding of the risk itself, and I guess also they're able to influence some of the preventative measures as well?
Yes, we see change there, and we obviously want to see more change, because we cannot make the energy transition and we cannot keep the climate change in check if there is no insurance covering these types of risks. So we need to see a lot more growth in capacity for such types of risks, and we hope that we can contribute there. The good thing with HDI Global is their vision is being partner in transformation, so they really take this seriously. But we also see interest from other insurers as well.
What about where you collaborate with your customers? I know they're a pretty important part of how you do this, but are you doing this with all the customers, or how does that work in practice?
Well, I think we're now at more than 50 use cases or ideas that moved into the funnel over the years. We always involve customers and try to do so early on, because we don't want to start with a technology solution. We first of all want to start with a validated pain point, meaning, is there really a problem worth solving? And for this, we engage with customers, we do interviews, demo solutions based on mockups, and we go into piloting with then a couple of customers who are willing to engage further in the development.
And then I see you've got a product called Leak 360. I can sort of guess what that does. I'm suspect it's to do with water and leakage in commercial buildings, but it'd be great to understand a little bit more about what that means in practice.
Yeah, you're spot on with your assumption. Leak 360 indeed is a solution for water leakages in commercial buildings. When we started with this use case, we just had a look at the statistics. And actually, water leakage is a very classical, high-frequency type of risk. So in Germany alone, each year, insurers pay out more than 3.1 billion in insured leakage claims in commercial, but also in private insurance. And the topic itself sounds so easy, but there's actually more to it. Because in the buildings, there are different types of leaks. You can have pipe bursts, micro leakages, or surface water from rain or broken machines or heating systems, for instance. So you need actually sensors that are capable of detecting different types of leaks. And there's a huge variety of technologies out there that promise to detect different types of leaks. And we went through a very in-depth testing and analysis of different types of sensors that we equipped buildings with and tested them for months to come up with those sensors that really help us to detect or address around 80% of all causes for water leakages in commercial buildings. So this is the basic for the solution. First of all, we need the sensors that help to detect the leakages, and those sensors communicate through our gateways with our solution so that we can then inform the asset managers or facility managers, but also help customers to monitor their portfolio of connected buildings. And even though we started as a solution for leakages, we came to realize that there is actually an application which provides a lot of additional value, which is in the context of ESG. Because real estate companies nowadays need to monitor and track their energy consumption in the buildings. One of those energy sources is water, and one of the basic functionalities of our solution is to monitor the water consumption. So now we use this solution not only for leakages, but really focus more on the ESG topic to help companies also digitize their workflows there and help them also in the monitoring of water consumption across different areas and types of buildings.
And I guess when you're talking about all the testing of different leak detectors for different types of flood, of course, one of the things you've also got to look out for is, or people use them have to look out for, is the false positives, isn't it? Because you don't want alarms to go off just because there's been a slight surge in the water usage or some other fluctuation. So I'm guessing that's quite a challenge as well, but it sounds like you've now got to the state where people are actually willing to use the detectors because it's not interfering with their business and providing a net benefit.
Absolutely. And just to give you the impression of the tangible benefit, so in terms of ESG certifications, people can or companies can collect points for the certification through using Leak360 in their buildings. And it really helps to reduce the workload for the facility managers, especially in times where we have a lack of skilled employees. It is very helpful that you can do remote monitoring of water usage instead of sending someone there to check.
And then are these normally put in when a building's being built? Because I'm guessing it's a lot cheaper to put in these devices during construction than to try to retrofit the devices later on.
The solution that we have developed can actually be retrofitted easily. That's not so much of an issue because most buildings existing out there that are in commercial use are, of course, already built and will be there for a long period of time as long as they are able to comply with the new regulations in Europe, for instance. So what we try to build are plug-and-play solutions that make it easy to be also installed later on. But obviously, it is also beneficial to have it installed directly after construction or in the last phase to then also monitor what might have gone wrong or still during construction.
And then how do you actually find your clients? Is there HDI clients? You work with other insurers. But are you personally or your team, are you going out there and making contact with people? Or how do they find you or how do you find them?
Yeah, we have different sales channels for our solutions because indeed we are a relatively small team and our focus is on building the software solutions. But we have the direct sales funnel then we have the sales funnel through partners, and this can be insurers, brokers, or also companies from the facility management area that want to extend their services to their customers. Where we do not have the connection to Leak, and it's really more about digitizing facility management and having solutions for ESG. So it really depends on the type of customer that we want to address, and then we choose a different channel.
Well, we should certainly introduce you to some of the people we've started to meet as we ourselves have expanded more into the risk management world, because we're talking to quite a few risk managers now, and you know, one of their frustrations is that they're collecting data, or insurers are asking for data and they're not really sure what they're doing with it, and the insurers aren't really too sure what to use it. So it feels like there's a massive opportunity out there, particularly to your point, you know, this has already been driven by ESG, and in many cases people are already collecting the data. But I suppose as we sort of therefore think sort of beyond where we are today, I mean, what do you see coming in the next 12 months?
Well, certainly there will be more applications in the renewable energy field, because there are still a lot of challenges to address. And then when I look more on the leakage side, there are a couple of different types how we can extend the solutions, either focusing more on further energy sources, so to say, in the buildings, or on the other hand, moving more into the construction piece of buildings. So there's a lot of opportunities, and that's also the beauty of IoT. It's not only about risk management, because risk always has a negative connotation, but it's really also about reducing operative costs and increasing the resilience of the own operations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I saw a quote actually over the weekend, costs are 7 times less on average if you can, you know, tackle the problem before it becomes a catastrophic loss. I guess it could be a whole range of different things. But it can be hard sometimes. I mean, this is sort of a question a little bit about how do you help people make the use case. It can be hard sometimes to quantify the benefit of a problem that hasn't happened. Are you asked sometimes by your clients, people you're working with, to sort of help them make the case internally about how they should justify spending money on either, you know, bringing in the more data or more systems?
Well, we clearly show them the benefits also apart from the insurance case. And that's actually something that people find most interesting, to see, oh, I can reduce my operations costs here. I can increase my efficiency. I have the data at hand when I need it. So I can better plan and my processes run smoother. I can use the data to already invoice my tenants. I can increase the services that I provide. But usually these different benefits also address different user personas, so to say, within the company that we are talking to. And this is also a challenge in IoT, that you usually provide value to different parties and you need to bring them to the table to come to a decision, or you need to find this one user persona that has the budget or that has the biggest benefit.
Yeah, you're sort of acting as a coach, rather like you did for setting up the business originally. You could have find your sponsor within the company, and then, as you said, often they've got to find other people to contribute budget or approve it, or, you know, all the things that can slow down the process. And then, Verena, HGI is based in Germany. How extensive are you globally with what the solutions you're offering?
That's the beauty of software. So as long as we do not have to ship sensors around the world, so we are quite flexible. So some of the solutions are available on a global scale simply because they use existing monitoring systems or existing sensors and just connect through an API to the cloud, and then the algorithms can run there and provide us with the results. So it depends on the use case. In some cases, we are still quite regional, sometimes because of the logistical constraints, but sometimes it's also because a use case only makes sense under certain regulations or under certain other market conditions.
And why software doesn't have to be constrained by geographical boundaries? There is actually a reason you're in Berlin rather than other parts of where HGI are based. And I guess it's not just because it's a great party city, but it's got a sort of very strong innovation culture. Is that part of why you went?
Yeah. So for us, the reason to go to Berlin was indeed, first of all, you have a lot of startups, you have a lot of innovation infrastructure, so to say, with a lot of events, networking, support here in Berlin, but most of all, it was because of the talents. So our focus was finding software developers with experience in IoT, and that's already quite a specific kind of developers that we were looking for. And usually it's easier to find them in Berlin, which is a very international city. To give you an idea, we are now roughly 25 people and we have 8 nationalities in the team. It's a very young team and the people come from many different backgrounds, many different companies, and this makes it really so special to work with them. And this is something that you find typically in cities like Berlin.
And what about you personally? I mean, you've gone from doing a PhD in supply chain, you're working for a large insurer, now you are founder of a scale-up now. How do you build your own learning? Because you've got the whole technology side of the business, plus you've got to build a business. And I guess a third layer on that, you've got to be innovative and not work 24 hours a day. Any top tips for other people building businesses on how to grow and stay sane at the same time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I started the company, I didn't pretend to have the answers to all the questions. It was a new business model around new technologies, and it was a greenfield environment. So no corporate infrastructure and services I was used to. And I focused on hiring the people that have a lot of experience in their specific area and making them part of the development. So it's not only about agile product development, it's also about agile business model development. And we created some assumptions already in the business plan, and these assumptions were then backed with criteria, KPIs, and we had a regular look at these to see where we need to adapt. So gathering a lot of evidence, don't pretend to know it all, working based on assumptions in short iterations and test those quickly and bring in experience from other fields, from other people.
Yeah, if you're building a technology company to deliver technology, you're building a company that learns from technology to scale the company. It's very important. Well, congratulations on all of those. And Avrina, is there anything that we haven't talked about that I should be asking you about or that you want to add into our discussion?
Well, I would say using IoT in insurance and risk management is still somewhat foreign to many people. Also, industrial companies struggle to implement IoT-based solutions in their classical business. But especially this connection between industrial applications and insurance and the new technologies, it's quite new. And I think it is a field which is worth exploring more. So we see a lot of challenges arising in our working environments, in the different industries. Customers are asking for more support, for insurers to step in, to become more innovative. So I would certainly say it's a field where more efforts need to be done, where insurers should try to dig deeper and also then partner up with companies that have expertise in the field, but also be in constant exchange with the customers on what they need.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And for people that want to learn more, both about the topic generally and what you're doing at HGI Thinks, are there any resources they can use to learn more about, you know, the kind of examples you've talked about, either specifically that you're working on or other ones out there that are worth looking at?
Yeah, so on our LinkedIn profile of HGI Thinks, you can subscribe to our newsletter where we collect the newest developments in IoT and risk management, but where we also publish our own developments and news from the organization. And in addition, for those that feel like coming to Berlin, we do on-site events here on our HGI Thinks IIoT campus on different topics around IoT and risk management. So in December, for instance, we had an event on AI in the operations of wind farms, where we bring together different experts, different perspectives to really discuss the trends in a specific market and try to come up with new solutions, build up a network, and develop these areas further together with our partners the customers and the insurers.
Well, if I'm allowed to come to one of your events, I'd love to come over to Berlin. We just had a successful event last week in New York. Actually, we had some of your colleagues at that event, and it'd be great to come to Berlin and get a more first-hand knowledge. So I don't know if you open it up to the broader community, but I'd be love to see a little bit
You're
more.
Welcome.
Good. I'll take that as an invitation. Really, that you've been very generous with your time and sharing some insights. Really enjoyed talking to you, and if I don't see you in Berlin, maybe I'll see you in London before then, but thank you very much.
Thank you, and have a good day, Matthew.
Well, there's something of a unique mixture there, a founder, startup company, and a CEO which spun out of a major insurer. So congratulations all round. Now, if you are an insurer and want to know more about how we can help you at Instech, discover who is out there to help you solve your problems, or you're a technology company that wants help telling your stories to the world, then you can find out more about us at www.instech.co, or you can contact us directly, Matthew Grant on LinkedIn, or any of us, hello@instech.co. That's it. We're done.